Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. I am your host for today, Susan Franzen, together with my co-host, Davida Harden. Hello, Davida.
Good morning, Susan. How are you?
I'm just great. But before we even talk about the weather, I'd like to take a minute to introduce you, to introduce our new host, Davida Harden. I met Davida when she was a guest a few weeks ago on Local Talk for our Martin Luther King Jr. Day program. She was representing the planning committee for the community for the Martin Luther King Jr. celebration that evening. In subsequent conversations with her, I realized that she had wide-ranging knowledge and insights into the community that we needed at KHOI. Since February is Black History Month, we were especially eager to find an appropriate programs. To me, an obvious one was on the NAACP, which I knew Davida was a member of. So when she talked to me about that, I wondered if we couldn't have a program on that, and our station manager, Ursula Rudenberg, suggested that Davida would be a great host for that program, and then she could invite the president of the NAACP, Edna Clinton, as our guest. Since many people would shy away from such an invitation to be a host on such short acquaintance with the station, I was very pleasantly surprised when Davida not only agreed, but looked on it as an opportunity to make people aware of diversity in our community, which is exactly what we wanted. It turns out that the KHOI founder, Roger Parmenter, had already been talking to Davida about the possibility of a program even before we were on the air. So this was a program that was meant to be, and a host who would add a valuable new perspective to KHOI. So welcome, Davida.
Thank you so much, Susan, for that warm welcome, officially, I would say. It is a pleasure and honor to be here this morning and to, as you said, to talk about diversity in our community. We have a great community, and we have a lot of potential, and we just want to make sure that we utilize all of that potential.
Thank you so much, Davida. I think there have been a lot of rumors about when the storm is going to hit and what it's going to be, and this is the report. Today, increasing clouds with a high near 47, light and variable wind becoming south-southeast 8 to 13 miles per hour in the afternoon. Tonight, rain, mainly after midnight, low around 32, south-southeast wind 5 to 13 miles per hour becoming east after midnight. Chance of precipitation is 100%. New precipitation amounts between a quarter and a half inch possible. Thursday, rain and snow, becoming all snow after 9 a.m. Temperature falling to around 30 degrees by 5 p.m. Windy, with an east-northeast wind 5 to 10 miles per hour, becoming west-northwest 21 to 31 miles per hour. Winds could gust as high as 43 miles per hour. Chance of precipitation is 100%. New snow accumulation of 5 to 9 inches possible. Thursday night, widespread blowing snow and a slight chance of snow before midnight. Then as areas of blowing snow after midnight. Mostly cloudy with a low around 17. Wind chill values as low as 0. Windy with west-northwest wind 20 to 32 miles per hour with gusts as high as 44 miles per hour. Chance of precipitation 20%. And Friday, mostly sunny with a high near 34 with west-southwest wind 17 to 22 miles per hour, decreasing to 9 to 14 miles per hour in the afternoon. Winds could gust as high as 30 miles per hour. So it sounds like we're going to have terrible driving conditions. At least it'll be better by Friday. Now it's customary at KHOI to take a few minutes to talk a little about the natural world, the passing of the seasons. This is on our phenology calendar that we often use. This is about the time that the cardinals start to have their mating calls. And yesterday, when Davida and I were in my dining room talking about the program. She was sitting with her back to the window where our bird feeders are, and just behind her shoulder, there was the first bright red male cardinal I've seen for months. And so I felt that was a good omen. And then we got to talking about the signs we look at for the changing seasons. And Davita had some kind of interesting little tidbits.
Yes, Susan. One of the tidbits was I drive around Ames with my grandchildren. And one day we saw a large flock of blackbirds just in an open area. And my granddaughter remarked, "Wow, what's going on?" And I said, "Watch them. It's getting rid of the snow. They're eating. They're getting their tummies filled." And sure enough, 3 or 4 days later, it snowed. And they're like, "Wow, Grandma, you're smart." So that nature helped me to be a super grandma that day. Another incident late last spring, everybody was waiting on spring to get here, and we were just driving around Ames, and the trees were looking so sad. And my granddaughter remarked, "I wish spring would come and so they can get green and be happy." And we just started driving around and started noticing buds, blossoms and shrubbery turning green and pops of color. And she got so excited, and she just screamed, "Spring is here, spring is here."
Well, we can still look forward to that.
Yes, we can.
Now, I would like to take this opportunity to introduce our guest for today, Edna Clinton, who is probably well known to a lot of our listeners. She's here because she's the current president of the NAACP. She was the master of ceremonies or mistress of ceremonies at the Martin Luther King Day celebration. But through the years, I think you were talking about how Edna was going to be introduced. Davita, do you want to do the rest of the intro?
Yes, I will. Edna, very special lady to me, just told me that she came to Ames here in 1966 with her husband because, Mr. Wayne Clinton had a job with the Ames Community School District. She then became the secretary of the Ames Community School District. She has served on the Human Relations Commission for 6 years and prior. And I didn't know that she was an investigator for the Ames Human Relations Commission, so I am still in awe of Ms. Edna Clinton. Good morning, Edna.
Good morning, Davita, and thank you for that kind words. One goes through life doing the things that they are passionate about, never thinking that other people are really watching them. Obviously, I was wrong about that. It's been a delight living in Ames. We have raised our children here. And they have gone on to be as successful in the various fields that they have chosen. We are avid Cyclone fans. My husband has all of these cardinal and gold things around the house. We even have a special parking sign outside on the fence for him to park. And it's ironic because Wayne does not have one single degree from Iowa State University. I am the one with the degree. I have two. So I tell him he is what I call a bootleg fan.
Bootleg cyclone?
Right, a bootleg cyclone. He takes great pride in being a bootleg cyclone.
The way we often do our programs here on Local Talk, as I believe a lot of you know, is we mix in a little local events, local culture, local organizations with our main serious part of the program. So we'll just take a little break, I believe, with Paul Hertz. Had an interview yesterday with a very interesting sounding composer or a couple of performers.
Well, a couple of performers. I talked to the professor of percussion at Iowa State in the music department, Matthew Coley, and a guest flautist who he's worked with for a long time, Scott McClinka, and they have a concert coming up this Thursday.
That's like tomorrow, right?
Yes, that is tomorrow.
Is there an interview?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, and we'll be hearing that right now.
Okay.
I'm speaking here with Matthew Coley, professor of percussion at the ISU Music Department, and Scott McClinka, who is the guest flautist for this concert this Thursday, February 20th at 7:30 p.m. in the Martha Ellen Tye Recital Hall.
Thank you. Thanks, Paul, for doing this interview. Yes, I'm Matthew Coley, and I teach here at ISU, and this is my fifth year. And so we're really excited to get to finally have Scott out to perform with the percussion ensemble, with some other faculty, and then also with me in just a duo format. Scott and I lived in Chicago and performed together in Chicago for about 6 years in 2002, 2008, before I moved to Ames. And so we were real anxious to get back to doing some of that duo music again. And so it's really a pleasure, and we're glad that all three venues, 220 East in Waterloo and First United Methodist Church in Ames, and also the School of Music at ISU, would host us.
Thanks, Matthew. It's my pleasure to be here also. This is actually my third time in Iowa. I did ride Ragbri a few years ago, and then I came to visit you last summer and we did some biking. And this is my third time, and my first time on campus, however. It's a beautiful campus. And my favorite piece on the program that we're going to perform on Thursday is The Garden of Adonis by Hovannis. And it's a piece of music originally written for flute and harp. However, Matthew and I transcribed it for flute and marimba. In two of the movements, I'm going to be playing the bass flute, and that's a rather unusual instrument that is not very common. It's an octave lower than the traditional flute, much bigger and much lower and deeper. So I hope you will come and hear the interesting sounds of flute and bass flute and alto flute and also some piccolo on the concert on Thursday, along with some fabulous marimba playing, along with the ISU percussion ensemble. So another piece that's on that program is the Dexter Morrill Concerto, arranged for piccolo and percussion ensemble. Matthew and I have worked with Dexter going back to the fall of 2012. I was the featured soloist for the Midwest premiere of the Dexter Morrill Piccolo Concerto in Rockford, Illinois. And Matthew played in the orchestra, and we worked with the composer and got some ideas on how he wanted his piece to be performed, and it was great to work with him. He's a New York composer, and he flew in for the performances. It was great to work with Matthew and Dexter for those concerts. This arrangement Matthew spent to include his percussion ensemble, and I'm looking forward to hearing it.
So the percussion ensemble is typically made up of about 10 players, and mostly they are music majors, usually music education or music performance. And then occasionally I have some non-majors, some talented percussionists who have chosen to major in other fields here at ISU. So I try to do some unique repertoire planning with the percussion ensemble. Last semester we did a piece for carillon and percussion ensemble. And I believe, Paul, you were at that concert. And this semester we're doing some piccolo and percussion ensemble. Also a Debussy arrangement for two flutes, four marimbas, vibraphone, and glockenspiel with narrator speaking in French. For this concert. So I try to vary it. We also have some of our standard percussion ensemble repertoire throughout the year, from world music to percussion symphonies with 10 players on marimbas and vibraphones and various pitched instruments. So our repertoire spans a large range of variety.
So something I find unusual about this concert isn't just that you performed it earlier this week outside of Ames, but you had a concert just this Monday night at First United Methodist Church.
Yes, we performed on Monday. Fred Lewis, who's the pastor at First United Methodist, was kind enough to open up the space for us, and it's a wonderful space for music. The acoustics are gorgeous, and especially for the marimba, we love big open resonant spaces when playing the marimba. And then Monday's concert was primarily duo music for Scott and I, and we will repeat one of those pieces Thursday at the concert here at Martha Ellen Tye. And then the concert Thursday will involve more of students, some other faculty. Our flute professor will also play with us, Sonia Giles, and bassoon professor Kevin Judge is going to play a trio for marimba, flute, and bassoon. And I'll let Scott maybe talk a little more about that.
So the trio for flute, bassoon, and marimba is by American composer Eric E. Wazin. And he's a living composer, has written tons of music for winds and percussion. There's a concerto for flute and wind ensemble. He's written not only for orchestra, but for concert band and wind ensembles. And his music is often performed at the collegiate level. So it's really great to hear his piece. It's going to be a very eclectic concert. I alluded to the Hovhaannes piece earlier in our interview in regards to its original instrumentation of flute and harp. And of course, we're performing it flute and marimba. But what I'd like to mention about Hovhaannes and what's so interesting about his music is he's very distinctive with his style. I'm always impressed by composers who can make their own sounds in music. And Hovhaannes does that. He's got a very distinctive style. And one of his characteristics is his music always have these sections called senza misura, which means without measure. And it's more than just a cadenza. It's a very free-flowing part of the piece that's very introspective. And I hope you can pick those sections out of the Hovhaannes if you come to our concert.
Most of the works on this concert have programmatic titles, titles that tell a story. And how is that story expressed in the music?
Yeah, this concert is very exciting in that the colors and the stories behind the titles really are vivid, I think. And so Scott was talking a lot about The Garden of Adonis by Alan Hovhaannes. And this piece really inspired our duo, actually, as flute and marimba, but also inspired the concerts that we've been doing because it's so close to Valentine's Day, and Adonis happens to be the god of beauty in Greek mythology. And each movement really depicts, I think, a nice colorful aspect maybe of his garden and his playground, or however you might describe it. And then the Debussy is a chanson. Les Chansons de Bilitis is based on some poems by Pierre Louis about a woman named Bilitis. Each poem, there's 12 movements in each one, fulfilling that colorful aspect and playful aspect of the poems, and it's shown in the music. The piece we're going to do with just percussion ensemble is called Soul Tunnels, and that will really bring in a world music aspect. It's hand drums called tars and bindirs and a rick, which is Egyptian hand drum. So we're bringing in some world culture and different sounds from the Middle Eastern cultures of hand drumming.
Well, thank you, Matthew and Scott, for sharing with our radio listeners some information about your upcoming concert. Matthew, what can you tell us about the music that we're about to hear?
So I believe this excerpt is from Mosaics by Eric E. Wazin. You'll hear Tarantella, which is the last movement, and the Tarantella is based on a dance, usually in a 6-8 feel. So it's a very lively, fast dance. Originally, a dance to get rid of poison from being bitten by a spider, I believe, the tarantula. And so what they would dance until death, right? Until the spider.
Or maybe it would cure.
Yes. Thank you.
This is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. Your hosts for today are Davida Harden and Susan Franzen. And we are about to approach the main part of our program with Edna Clinton of the NAACP. But for those of you who tuned in late, I just want to let you know that what you've been listening to is an interview and some music from a concert that will be a percussion concert that will be tomorrow evening, February 20th, at the Martha Ellen Tye Recital Hall. So just so you know what's coming up. Now, here we are with Edna. I believe we introduced her earlier, but we know people tune in late. So this is Edna Clinton, longtime and very active resident of Ames, here with her current president of the NAACP identity to talk to us about that organization.
Thank you, Susan. Many people wonder about Black history, and I will get to the NAACP, but I think it's important to set the stage, you know, because Black history follows the Martin Luther King celebration, and it kind of all melts together. And Black history was established back in 1976, and it is an annual celebration of achievements by Black Americans, and it is a time for recognizing the central role in our U.S. history. The event grew out of Negro History Week, the brainchild of a noted historian, Carter Woodson, and other prominent African Americans. And ever since 1976, U.S. presidents have officially designated February as the month of Black history. And so that's a little bit of a background on the Black History Month. It is one of the reasons why we celebrate NAACP, at least here in the Ames area. We do this in February.
Well, I think that many people in Ames may not even be aware of this organization and what the acronym stands for and why.
Okay, the acronym stands for the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People. Many people question why the words colored people, but you must remember that in 1909, this was appropriate language, okay? The mission of the NAACP is to ensure the political, educational, social, and economic equality of rights of all persons and to eliminate racial hatred and discrimination. So in a nutshell, that's what the acronym stands for and what the mission of the organization is. I can give you a little bit of history if you'd like.
Yes. Why was it founded in 1909?
Okay. Well, what was happening in that era, during that era, a tremendous amount of lynching of African Americans, mainly men. That was not exclusive to men, but African Americans particularly. And a group of individuals got together, about 60 of them. And I must tell you that 53 of them were of the majority race. Only 7 were African Americans. They were appalled at the lynching and the unjust behavior of the society at that time. And so they got together to change it. And out of that, the NAACP was born.
And what was its history after that? What did they do?
Well, they got socially engaged in various areas, and from education to jobs to basically some of the very same things that we get involved in today. Brown versus the Board of Education, separate but equal. Some people will remember that and some people will not. Milestones for African Americans that got involved with the Martin Luther King marches that changed our nation. Because everybody remembers his dream speech, you know. But the NAACP was a part of that. Many young people lost their lives simply because they were attempting to register people to vote.
Yes, well, in that era, it went beyond the NAACP, but I know Rosa Parks was a secretary of the president of the local chapter of the NAACP.
That is correct. And, you know, there is a saying, and this is not, I'm going to go ahead and say this, and it's not to offend anybody, but if you visualize what happened, Rosa sat so that Martin could walk, so that Barack could run, and our children could fly.
Oh, that's a lovely sequence, yes.
Yes, yes, it is.
So to get back to the history, one of the reasons that I was so eager to see this is when I was growing up, I was very aware of the NAACP, but I haven't heard anything about it for a long time. So I wondered what has happened.
Well, first of all, I guess we have not had what you would call national events to bring it to the forefront. I do believe that you're going to see a resurgence with the voter registration issues that are going on in our country. But the NAACP has not disappeared since 1909. And here in Ames, the Ames branch was organized in 1994. Okay. And of the number of individuals that came together to organize it, we had 37 high school age children involved in that movement. And I guess we will always have activity from the NAACP standpoint anyway. It's an organization that works for all of us. In Dr. King's dream of everyone being judged by the content of their character has not become a reality yet. And so there's still work to be done. And engaging individuals here in Ames, I believe we can do this.
Well, do you have any instances of issues that you want to work with? Any stories about things that particularly stimulated you to get involved again in this? Because, as you said, and it started in 98, and then it went dormant for a while. I understand you just reactivated it a couple years ago.
Yes, we did. And the only reason that went dormant was because of some very serious issues with the then president, Dr. George Jackson. And it was so sudden and everything, you know, it just took everybody by surprise. You know, Dr. Jackson was responsible for starting the Freedom Fund banquet here in Ames, very active in the movement of getting people involved and engaged and being concerned about issues in our community, how we can affect our community. Sometimes, and I will tell this bit of a story, being in Iowa, you know, being in farm country, I think some people might be able to relate to it, others may not. But when you go down the road, much as the horses did in the old days, farmers put blinders on them so that they would stay focused on the middle of the road and not see out the peripheral. Their peripheral vision was cut short. And sometimes we as individuals have blinders on. And I think that Ames is a community in which blinders can be removed for those who may still have them. I think we have a large number of individuals without blinders. They have insight, they are engaged, and they are extremely committed to our community being a just, equal, safe community for everyone who chooses to live here.
Well, I'd like to take take that image a little farther. So I'm a person with blinders on. In this analogy. And if you take my blinders off, what will I see besides what's straight ahead of me, which is what you said in the beginning, what a nice town Ames is. Our kids grow up, they do well, and we have friends, and we have jobs, and everything is fine for us. So take my blinders off.
I will take your blinders off, and I will use education as one of the things that once your blinders are off, you will see. We have a diverse community of people from all walks of life, different cultural backgrounds, different experiences, different access to things that you or I may think are normal and can't understand, well, why, you know, is there. Maybe they don't know how. So let's just take a child that perhaps may be in a family who lives below the poverty level. Okay. You're going to have a family, say of four. Statistics say in order for that family to live above the poverty level, there should be an income in the neighborhood of $40,000, which is a little less by a few cents of $20 an hour. Okay. Most of us would say $20 an hour. It's a reality. So if you're not making that kind of money, there are other things that are going to be void in your life. Perhaps there's no books in the home. That's where raising readers has become very prevalent in the community. But once that child gets past the third grade, there are no more books. So there's a slack there. So the child will fall behind. This is our future. This child needs to grow up educated, because I do believe that education does remove the blinders. Now, education can be formal. Education can be from engaging in the community. Education can be as simple as us talking. This is an educational opportunity. Your blinders should be removed, because the child who grew up in the family who can't afford the books past the age of third grade will have more as they go along to build on. So you have a group of children starting off that's the same, but then one falls off because of economic conditions. Okay, that also influences housing. It influences just the whole gamut of things. Have I removed your blinders?
Well, a little bit. Actually, I'd like to repeat a little fact that I learned probably on KHOI or in conversations around it, and that is that there are two schools in Ames. I believe Sawyer is one and the other is Mitchell, that have 50% of the children free or reduced lunch, which I think is a sign of poverty.
Mm-hmm. That
so
is correct.
So this is not, oh, there are a few poor people out there, but we just don't see them. We don't see them, but they are really among us. And that's, of course, by among us, I mean among us, the people with the blinders that I represent. Mm-hmm. And so this is a huge issue for us to be thinking about as a community.
I believe so.
And so, well, thank you for helping me to at least get my blinders a little loose.
Yeah, I'll clean your lenses up later, okay?
we're talking about the educational system and what we see, and I have the opportunity to see the children in where I work at the middle school, and I see all of the children. And one thing that I really enjoy is the happy faces, the smiles. They just want to be kids. They just want to have, you know, enjoy their life. And I think it is our obligation to remove the blinders of the adults so the children can grow up in continue on in a happy childhood as preteens, or tweens as they call them. And that inspires me, that, you know, and gives me hope for our future, for our community, because these children are growing up together and they're making friendships and bonding and learning to support each other and trust each other. So that is very inspirational and encouraging to me.
So we have just about 6 minutes to talk about the rest of the things we were going to talk about, and I just like to, well, I'll turn it over to you, Davida. What do you think is the most important thing to go to next?
I think right now what we need to talk about now, we did kind of talk about the Freedom Fund Banquet and how it got started, and I had the honor and the privilege to attend for the last 2 years, and I'm just in awe of the sense of responsibility by the NAACP to engage the entire community. Edna, can you give us some of the behind-the-scenes info on how that comes together, when it started, and why is it so important now?
The Freedom Fund Banquet started over 100 years ago. Okay. And since the NAACP fights for equal rights for all citizens, the Freedom Fund Banquet is a united effort of individuals to raise money for programs and focus in on the advocacy and youth development. Now, in addition to that, how the one started here with the Ames branch. Okay, the Ames NAACP, I need to back up and let you know that we are not a separate organization from the national organization. In order to be recognized as an NAACP branch, we must follow the rules, the constitution, and the bylaws of the national. And they have specific things to work on. And we can curtail those things to fit our community needs under that large, broad umbrella. Our Freedom Fund Banquet started in 1966, I believe, or thereabouts, and Dr. Jackson was the one that started it. He was a history buff, and during that time period, we kind of looked at the Martin Luther King celebration in the city, Black History Month coming up in February, and all of the things surrounding all of this, so that it kind of melted together. And that is why our Freedom Fund Banquet is held first Friday in February every year, okay, just to kind of get all of those programs together. And we have continued to follow that practice here. We felt that to get the people re-engaged and refocused in terms of the what we call game changers, and that is issues of health, education, justice, economics, and climate justice. And we look at the community through these lenses. And we believe that because of these issues, well, we believe that these issues, you know, provide a different view for us to look at lack of access and participation in our community. Gives us a roadmap to follow, you know, with the greenery on the side.
Well, thank you. And I know that you also have relationships with other African-American groups, particularly on campus, and we'd like to talk about that more. But maybe we have just a couple minutes. Do you want to say anything about that or any youth programs that you are foreseeing?
Well, first of all, we're just now going into our second year, okay? And we are in the process of organizing to decide on how we want to be most effective in Ames, Iowa, and Story County, okay? We do have a relationship with the college NAACP group. There is an organization called the Black Student Alliance. We have not fostered a relationship with them yet. We are in the process of fostering a relationship with the Black faculty and staff. So those are the three organizations right now that we are being involved with. We look forward to getting involved with other, partnering with other groups to bring the dream to a reality.
Well, thank you very much. And I'm looking forward to hearing more news of what's going on with you and the all of the groups and your goals. And I was very interested to see that climate justice is one of your goals.
Oh, yes. Yes. And if we don't have a world to live in, you know, the rest of it is a moot point.
That's very interesting to hear that you see that as part of racial justice, too.
Yes.
They among the most important organizations in culturally are the various Black churches and the very largely integrated church. And there's I think that the one that I know about is the one that DaVita goes to. Would you like to say a little bit about it and introduce the music that will be coming up?
Yes, I will. The church is the Body of Christ Church, and the pastor is Pastor Torian Smith. It is a very diverse congregation. I have a great time there learning and fellowshipping with people who don't look like me. And as I said earlier, it is the great thing to see smiles on people's faces. They interact with each other regardless of race or regardless of ethnicity background, economic background, just coming together to have a good time. The group you're going to hear is the Gospel Soul Innovators, and they are wonderful. And I hope you enjoy.
You've been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. Today, we've been talking about both the history of the NAACP, the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People, and the plans of the newly reactivated chapter in Ames. Our guest has been Edna Clinton, president of this chapter. Our hosts today have been DaVita Harden and Susan Franzen. Reporters who've contributed to this show are Paul Hertz and Pat Schlarbaum. Local Talk is engineered by Richard Morrison, and music you heard today was Now Arise by Gospel Soul Innovators from their CD, The Glory of Life.
We also heard Matthew Coley on marimba, Scott Metlicka on flutes, and Carl Reitze on bassoon perform the movements Tarantella and Fantasia and Fugue from Mosaics by Eric Awaisen.
Our theme song is Backtrackin' by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. You can also listen to this show and all of our past Local Talk shows online at our website, khoifm.org. That's khoifm.org. And see listings of our past guests and resource contact information. You will also find lists of our guests and contact information to the organizations and other resources mentioned in our shows. If you enjoyed this show, tell your friends and consider becoming one of the 500 families donating $20 per month or $250 per year to help us with our operating expenses. But if that's a little beyond your budget, we would appreciate whatever you can contribute. And we also appreciate your feedback either by phone at 292-2878 or by email at khoiradio, khoiradio at gmail.com with news in the subject line. Local Talk is a radio production training workshop as well as a radio show. If you would like to join the team as a reporter, contact us at 292-2878 or at the email khoiradio@gmail.com. Your participation as audience is what makes KHOI possible. Thank you for listening and see you again on the radio. Thank you.
Thank you.